Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Especially after seeing Olympia, like, you can tell, like, it really was two against one.
Renee, what a great day. A day I've been waiting for years, a day I've been asking you to facilitate since we started this. My number one guest that I could possibly imagine having has finally sat down with you in Florida to chat. It's Venus Williams.
Yes, it is Venus Williams. Yes, we do talk about the fact that we've been trying to get this done. She has, you know, she has spoken to me many times about being willing to do it and was just finding the time, and she explains why, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, we finally get Venus Williams on the pod, and I'm so excited for everybody to take a listen.
I think what struck me about this conversation is, you know, you've known her since she was a child, and you talk about that at length and obviously how she's grown and changed and what you've seen and everything that you've told me about who she is as a person. Setting aside a champion on the court, setting aside a crusader for gender equality, setting aside all the stuff that we know about her, but who she is as a person really, really came through in listening to this. And I'm not going to give too much of it away because people are going to dive in shortly. Parts of her are a little quiet and thoughtful and pensive, and a lot of her doesn't give a single fuck. And I thought that was so cool. Like, I wrote for Eurosport in a new column I'm doing last week that Venus Williams has largely been unbothered. She's had so much to deal with, but she's been unbothered. And that unbothered sense really came through. She cares about the things she cares about deeply and passionately, but for everything else, she's so good at tuning things out.
She's always been a person, Caitlin, no matter how many times I've had conversations with her about, you know, whatever. She just, when she doesn't want to give something any energy, she doesn't. And in such a positive way, like, it could be about gossiping about something or wanting to know X or Y. She's just like, I'm not going to waste my energy on that because I have so much more energy to give in another way. And it comes through, obviously, in the pod. It's always come through to me in life. Like, I always want to jab her with something like, oh, come on, you know, give me something more. And she's like, no, actually, it's just how I feel. So she just is such a positive, I don't even know how to describe it any better than she's just the most incredibly positive human being literally that I've ever been around. There's never a negative that comes out of her mouth or from her body language or anything. She just is a consistently positive, grateful human being.
Yeah, I can't wait for people to listen because everything you've said about her, everything that we know about her, all shows up here. You talk about the film that's coming out, about her dad, you talk about obviously her early life, some of her activism, her design. It's wide ranging, which is what I was hoping it would be. And it's just funny because some of the moments in this interview are quiet. You know, I had to pull up the volume on her as opposed to you, which I never have to pull up the volume on, as you might imagine. largely because she goes to this like really introspective, quiet place. She says something really impactful and then she just keeps moving forward. And it's so interesting to hear her literally do that in the tone of her voice.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think it was because the mic was a little closer to me. And she kept kind of like slinking more and more back into the couch. So she kept getting further and further away from the mic sometimes. But, you know, to be honest with you, Caitlin, I could have sat there for 10 hours. We could have sat there for 10 hours talking about so many things about her life. I could have brought up a million matches that I've watched. I could have brought up a lot more controversial things. Like, you know, when I walk away from interviews, often I'm like, oh, I wish I'd discussed this or I wish I'd talked about that. And, you know, I could have gone into ad nauseum about her career and some even you know, difficult stuff that's happened in her life. And, you know, she's had deaths in her family. She's had massive controversy. But, you know, when you're around Venus, you just know she doesn't, and you will figure that out. That's what we've just talked about. She doesn't want to go to the negative. She doesn't want to go back. She's never a person that goes back. So I just felt, you know, as the interview was going on, it was just, let's just always stay in the positive. And she made me stay in the positive throughout this pod. And I cannot wait for people just to hear a little bit of her. And just a little sidebar, she did write me the next day a text and said that was the funnest, best interview that she's been involved with. I think it was because she was just being nice. But to be honest with you, it was so nice to sit with her for 45 minutes to an hour. And we spoke for about half an hour even before I pushed record, just talking. And I hope everybody enjoys it, because I constantly and will always say this, I love her so much. I will continue to love her. She's been an amazing ambassador for the sport of tennis. And I just hope everybody enjoys a little bit of little slice of what you're going to hear today.
All right, let's let them enjoy it. Thanks, Renee.
We have been trying to do this for a number of years, and I just want to say to everybody out there listening, we have the great and wonderful Venus Williams on the Racquet Magazine pod. V, first of all, I'm in your house, and I just want to say it's beautiful, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I know it's been a year, mostly my fault, but I do have a job. So do you, but
you have
several jobs.
You have many jobs.
And I get overwhelmed and tired, to be honest. So.
Well, and there was no excuse on this one, because you realized that I was actually staying with friends about a 3-minute drive away. Yeah. So if we were ever
going to drive or walk?
I drove. Don't give me a hard time.
It's walking distance.
It's about a 30-minute walk.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Is it? How do you walk? Yeah.
Slowly. I'm old. I'm 50 now. One of the things I always talk about, and you probably have completely forgotten about this because you claim that you don't remember much about anything half the time, but I think that's selective memory. Do you remember the first time I met you at Pam's event?
No.
See? This is what I'm talking about. What?
I didn't even know where I was. I was like 13.
I think you were 12 or 13, yeah.
Yeah, I was a giant.
You were...
I was like 5'11", and yeah, 13 years old.
And I hit with you, and I hit with Serena at Pam's event. And I remember Pam said to me, what do you think? And I'm like, yeah, pretty good.
It's hard to know at that age. It's really hard to know.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't remember if I was good or not. I got good a little bit later, like at least a year later. I guess I got a lot better.
I think you got a lot better.
Yeah.
Because you were like 12. So it wasn't that difficult. It wasn't difficult to get much better after being 13. I want to know when you first came out, because you didn't play obviously juniors. You played, you know, you obviously hitting with kids at your age, but when you came on tour, like how eye opening was that for you?
How eye opening was that for me? I didn't even know where I was. So like that's why I don't remember. I didn't know where I was. I didn't even know how draw worked. I just knew that I did what I did in practice, and it was pretty simple for me. So oblivious. So I think that made it easy.
Like in what way?
Like for example, I played Indian Wells one year, and this is, I didn't really play when I turned pro, you know, I didn't play much, but I finally played Indian Wells a few years later, and I remember Chanda Rubin asked me, where are you in the draw? And I said, I'm in the middle. I didn't understand there was a top and a bottom, you know? So those things, like, my parents didn't teach me. It was more about like learning to play, developing your game, making the right play so that way you could be great one day. So it was like no emphasis on winning or anything, even though we played to win. It's hard to describe.
Wow, that's so fascinating. So it wasn't about,
it was about doing the right thing and being execute the right thing. And if you do that, you will win. So it wasn't about winning. It was about, I guess, the process. So maybe they were process driven. Wow.
You just realized this?
I didn't think about it. They're just mom and dad. I don't think about mom and dad are process driven and they believe in design thinking.
Wow, that's so fascinating. I always say that to people that I talk to now that have kids that are about 12, 13, 14. And I always say to them, don't worry about the wins and losses now. You won't even remember them back then. What you will remember is that they develop their game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that was one of the questions that I was going to ask you later on. But now that we're on the subject, what were the most important things that both of your parents taught you individually?
On the court?
Yeah, on and off the court.
My dad really insisted on a big game because, unbeknownst to many, Serena was like a slicer and dicer growing up. When she was little, she wanted to drop shot and slice and serve and volley. And my dad said, no, hit the ball. So I'm glad he told her that because she can hit the ball hard now. But her nature was like completely different, but it makes sense with her personality, right?
Totally.
Slice, dice, drop shot.
Whoa. I don't know about slice and dice and drop. I don't know about the drop shot, although she does like to still do that.
She liked to drop shot. She was a different player. So my dad like kind of, you know, created this new game of like power. And, you know, we only played offense. We could play defense, but it wasn't – we – we're playing offense even when someone would be playing defense. So it was, you know, it was like this whole new thing. So, yeah, my parents never put pressure on us to win. I never felt like I had to win for them or anything. So I think that in itself was great because you were free to just be. Mm-hmm. And, then you got better because of that. But off of the court definitely just really grounded because, you know, we just have like a very strong spiritual faith and background. So that's the most important thing my parents gave to me. But so many things. And just as Olympias here, it's like, oh my God, like my parents were so smart. Like, how do I impart some of that knowledge onto them? You can't do it all in one day. So now I really appreciate it. Now that she's here, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wow. I mean, this is why I love doing this. Honestly, because I've known you for...
Yeah, but we don't chat about, like, what are the best lessons? We're like, yeah, so did you hear about so-and-so? You know? Yeah,
well, that's true. Let's not tell people what we really talk about.
Oh, right.
Let's no, but I'm always so fascinated by what develops a person as a human, as well as a tennis player, and what makes them a great tennis player. But you, you did say, I mean, you and Serena are so different personality-wise. How did that...
That's so interesting because everyone says that, but I'm like, all I see is how we're the same. You know?
You see that?
That's all I see is how we're the same, you know? And I know that I guess we're different, but...
I think what the only... Because the personality that people see is on the court, right? Mm-hmm. I see you both off the court and I see the similarities between the two of you. You're both so fun-loving and funny and joke around and your kids and... I mean, one of the most remarkable moments for me was before the last final that you played in the Grand Slam, and I was in the same locker room as you two, and you're in front of the mirror, and you're both doing your hair, and you're like making yourself look good before you go on the court, and you're chatting away, and I'm like, you're about to go and play a Grand Slam final. It was so...
Yeah, I think people still like are waiting for like, what do you call it, the ball to drop or whatever, like, oh my God, they hate each other. You know, like they're like still waiting. It's like actually... Can be further from the opposite, you know.
Can you take me back to that final, actually? Because I remember I was courtside for that match, and I remember one of the most distinct things that I remember about that was doing the coin toss, and you were smiling, and you were so happy to like have this moment again and give it everything, and Serena was so stoic, like. And I remember the photo that was taken at the net. And you had the biggest smile on your face and you had your arm around Serena and she had both her arms next to her side. It was like, I, you're just another person. You're just another person. And you are standing there with this like very open, loving arm around her as the big sister caretaker. Is that like a feeling that you get when you go on the court with her?
It's a Grand Slam final, so I am focused, you know, on trying to win the match. So. Yeah. Regardless of if I'm smiling or not, I am there to play tennis.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, the other stuff is the other stuff.
Oh, well, explain to me how hard that is, though, to actually play in such an incredibly important, you know, career moment for you, but have to actually play against someone you love more than anybody in the whole world.
Yeah, I mean, I want to win, but I obviously want the best for her, too, because she's a big sister, so... It's a moment, and you just got to realize it is a moment, and years from now, you want to just know that you gave your best, regardless of if it was your sister or not, because mm-hmm. you don't get those moments all the time. Even as many times as I've had that moment, and she's had that moment, those moments are still special every time, so you have to treat it that way, no matter who it is. And mm-hmm. if you can just see it as a game, then it's a lot simpler.
In that match, obviously, we all found out later on that she was pregnant.
Yes, and I would like to say it was unfair.
Yeah, two against one.
Yes, I'm still trying to get that, you know, trophy.
I know where you can find it.
And especially after seeing Olympia, like, you can tell, like, it really was 2 against 1.
100%. I mean, her little body is like
she
a little baby.
She has the best athletic body I've ever seen in my life. Like, she puts Serena and I to shame.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel that you were totally, you're justifiable in feeling like you got robbed there.
Yes, yeah. I agree. Thank you.
It's not fair. But the thought that you knew she was pregnant, I mean.
Well, she didn't tell me, but I knew, so.
How?
You know, I know my sister, and she said something here and there in jest, but I'm like, what's going on here? So even though she didn't tell me.
Well, I remember after the match when she...
Or did she tell me?
No, I thought she told you.
Maybe she did. She did, maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe it was because before she told me, I knew. I know that before she told me, I kind of like, was like, oh, okay, yeah, makes sense. So I don't remember actually now, like 4 years later, what the timing was.
I thought she was being a good girl because I said after
yeah,
she
actually,
won.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I did know. I think I knew, yeah. Looking back, whatever.
So, I mean,
I still lost, damn it.
You're standing up there at the trophy going, oh my God, like she's holding this trophy up and I know in like 9 months' time she's going to have a little baby. I mean, it must have been crazy.
I know I am. I don't remember every detail. I don't know what I was thinking in that time.
I know. I love that. I know that you didn't, you've said to me in the past that you don't really necessarily love kids, but is that changed now because of
it's
her?
Definitely softened me up because I was definitely like a, I don't know, wicked stepmother. You know,
yeah.
Horrible. So it's definitely softened me up a ton. But you know, am I ready to have my own kids? No, I'm just so. I barely can take care of me. My coach brings me water, brings me extra pairs of shoes in case I forget something. So yeah, am I ready to have a kid? No, thanks.
All right, because that was something that you know people were writing me on Twitter wanted to know about
no,
you and having kids.
I'm just. It's a lot of work. It's the most important job you have in the world. And I'm still so self-centered, even though I'm not a selfish person. But as an athlete, you are self-centered. You know?
Yes, I say it all the time. Tennis players are very selfish.
Was very.
Very.
Oh.
The worst.
I'm the best of the worst.
You're pretty good. You're pretty good. How important was it for you to like going through your entire career and still going? Oh my God. Do you remember you guys used to give me so much shit that I was still playing tennis?
No,
like,
actually, I encouraged you to keep going. I said, don't give it up.
I remember being in the training room and you saw me in the training room and you're like, you still playing?
Well, come on. I have to
give him
joking,
a shit.
Yes. But I was like, don't stop because you were thinking about stopping. I was like, no, keep going.
I know. Well, I keep having to play you guys in the semis. And
but I think though, like you were injured and then like after you retired, you're like, now I feel better.
Yeah.
It's
well,
always like that.
It doesn't know. It goes downhill quickly. Actually, your body starts falling apart.
Really? Huh? I'm going to like just get seriously into lifting after I play tennis.
What?
I like weights, but you know, when you are playing tennis, it's very difficult because you like, you can train and you train those 6 weeks and then you go on tour and you can't be lifting weights.
No.
And you're on tour for 6 weeks. And so you can never really keep
yeah.
that those gains or you can't like
yeah,
then
yeah.
go back and lift the same as you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I actually like, I don't like cardio. I love weights. And so I'll definitely be lifting a lot more weight.
I'm with you on that. I don't like cardio either. I'm like, I'd rather like lift. But if you do it correctly, you can get your heart rate up and you'll be
it's
fine.
It's true.
Take me back to the match with Lindsay that you won at Wimbledon.
Oh, 2005. She played better than I did. I will say that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was not the question I was going to ask, but
oh.
Why do you say that?
Because I saw the match later on. Every time that match is on, my dad calls me. He says, your match is on. I don't know how he knows this. Like, he has a radar to when that match comes on. I'm like, Dad, okay. And sometimes he'll show it like a few days in a row, and he'll call me every day. It's on.
Come on.
And so I'll watch it, and I'm like, crap, she played better than I did. But I was just scrappy that day.
You scrappy.
I wasn't playing that great looking back, and I just wouldn't die. I was like that cat with nine lives. I was like the zombie. I just wouldn't go away. And somehow, so yeah, I feel like she deserved to win that match. And that's tough though, because when you feel like, and I just realized, I guess she got a little hurt at the end or something. Something happened in her back, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know for sure.
I didn't even see that when I was playing. So
yeah.
It looked
well,
like maybe she tweaked something or maybe her SI went off. I don't know.
She definitely had, she had knee or back problems throughout her career.
It was kind of towards the very end of the match.
Yeah.
She still played well, but it was
one of the great
not
matches.
Ideal. Yeah.
Absolute great matches of Wimbledon's history, but you also were like, was that the year you were fighting for equal prize money as well?
That's when it kind of started.
So how tough was that period of time for you as well? And like having to put that extra, as you know, we just said, tennis players are selfish.
Tennis players are selfish.
So why do this very unselfish thing?
I think it was no extra burden, to be honest. I mean, what are you going to do? Say, well, I got to play my match, so we'll just still sit here and not get paid the same. So it didn't feel like any extra burden at all, to be honest. It was the right thing to do. Honestly, the great opportunity for me to be a part of something like that. You think, okay, I'm going to grow up and play tennis and maybe win Wimbledon, but you don't think that you're going to be able to grow up and do something like that, you know?
Yeah. So have a legacy.
Yeah, I mean, legacy is great, but that's like serious. So
you're making a change for the betterment of your future.
Yeah.
Your own future and, you know, everyone else's.
I don't think you are thinking about that at the time. You're just like, man, this is not right. Like, I don't, this sucks. I hate it. Let's do something about it. You're not thinking about, this will be my legacy. Let me get an award or something, you know?
Yeah. So I guess what's ironic about that is winning the title and knowing that every time this happens now.
Cha-ching! Cha-ching! No.
You're thinking, at least I'm getting the same as those guys.
Yeah, I planned it that way. No, it was a great moment, and Billie Jean was in the audience.
Yeah.
And it was just a great, harmonious moment for everyone, probably except Marianne, who won a few years later. But, like, when you're losing, you're like, it's not a great moment. So everyone was happy, and it was definitely full circle and happened a lot sooner than I ever thought it would. It was like 2 years.
Yeah.
After like 40 years of rejection.
Yeah. Well, and then you got to reap those benefits going forward, right?
Yes. And I just feel like I want to collect a percentage on everyone's check after that. I'm going to petition for that. That should have been like the clause in there. Like, yeah, I need 10% of everybody.
Oh, 10% is a lot. Come on. Let's go with 2. Let's start.
What?
Well, you know, come on.
Okay.
All right. Well, so it's funny because someone asked, you know, I told, you know, a couple of people that I really respected that I was getting the privilege of talking to you today for this. And someone said to me, you know, I want to know beyond the tennis players, is there a moment or a decision that you felt like you had, that it empowered you as a female, as a African American woman, where you were like really stepping out and being this empowering figure outside of just tennis? Was there a moment where you're like, I understand now that I'm actually more than just a tennis player?
I think that moment maybe is still coming. I mean, I don't know. I mean, as a tennis player, you gotta earn your keep every single time, just with any other work or job. And so you have to stay in the moment. If you start basking in some sort of, you know, pretend world, doesn't exist anymore. That was the past. Like, you won, but it's over. So let's get with today. And so I'm super focused on that moment. But I think, if anything, just the empowerment for me came from my parents growing up. You know, there was no option other than confident, to be strong, and to be all those different things. So I think it'll
value yourself.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't understand any other way. I get it that there's a lot of realities out there where you don't, but and sometimes you don't value yourself in ways that you should. And when you're trying something new, or maybe you failed and you figured you don't value yourself the same. But yeah, those moments came as a child for me. So I guess, you know, it was a twofold answer.
Yeah.
Because it's weird to me, like, the whole fame thing. I don't chase it at all. So,
no.
Masks are the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, I actually can engage with people and have conversations on a human level, you know? And
when everyone's got a mask on.
When I have a mask on, you know, nobody knows anything about me. And I love that. I'm never not going to wear the mask. So I'm going to always be like, you're like, there's probably going to be still be people who wear the mask.
For sure.
And I'm going to wear a mask wherever I go.
Celebrities are loving the mask because they can actually walk around in public and not really be as noticed and as kind of annoyed.
And actually talk to people.
Yeah. Or have
just
people.
Just talk, you know, and just connect and, you know, not. I'm grateful, obviously, know. But it's, you know.
No, I don't know, because I'm not famous. So.
Well, I mean, you know, you like to talk with people and you connect with people very easily. So just imagine never actually being able to do that ever.
Because of,
yeah,
always wondering what people want.
Even though people are connecting to you because of this thing, but you're kind of like, you know, you don't get to connect back in a way because you're not actually that thing that they think you are. Even though, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just a person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really cool to just be up in Home Goods and just chat with somebody. You know what I mean?
Like, Home Goods is your place.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of where it first started. Like, in quarantine, I had my mask on. I went out and I was like, oh my God, I just get to talk to people. This is great.
Well, it must be hard for you too, because you're not exactly this little person that can just walk in and sort of kind of...
Oh, my giant.
I mean, you're 6'2".
African-American woman. You know, it's not like you're just going to...
It's not like you're just going to slink into a crowd.
I feel like just me.
I mean, you
apparently
and I,
I'm a giant.
You and I have been out a few times in general just to have fun, and you're like, you know, you don't want to talk to me. I'm like, because you're very intimidating and you're not exactly someone that people can't recognize. I mean, it's like you walk into a room and it's like, oh, boom, Venus Williams, you know? And I can't imagine, like, I can't imagine going through life having to just what you talked about. Like, it's, you know, some yeah. fame is great, but it's there are downsides.
Yeah, I definitely am not one of those people that are like, you know, where they can't even function anymore. Definitely not that, but it's not something that I pursue. All. It's just a part of.
So how do you
hopefully
use
win
that?
A match? You know?
Yeah, of course. And how do you use that in regular life to say, okay, it is what it is, and I'm going to embrace it, and I'm going to use it for the good?
I mean, I would definitely say on dinner reservations, it definitely helps. But I never call myself. I'll ask someone else to call because it's just cringeworthy for me to call and be like, well, it's for me, and it's just. But I'll be like, can you call? So I would say that's where I've really benefited the most. Dinner reservations. So, or every now and then, like, I wanted to see this dermatologist, and she's African American, like, the only one that kind of specializes in African American skin in Florida. And, you know, called the office.
What's her name?
Maybe you're
getting
Heather Woolery, MD. And I just had to DM her. I was like, I need to come in. Like, my skin's going crazy. And, like, that was, like, you know. So every now and then there's moments like that. But I don't really, like.
You dropped the.
I'm not out there every day.
No,
like,
do you know who I am?
Or whatever. Someone did that to me once. It was a double play. Not you. But she.
She goes, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
No. She wanted to play with you?
She didn't. I was like 15 years old. And.
Did you ask her to play?
She comes up to me. She says, hey, how are you? You want to play doubles with me? I was like, no, thank you. She's like, do you know who I am? One of my biggest regrets. I was a kid. Today I would have been like, no. Refresh me, but I was 15 and I was like, no, I was like, yeah, I do. Just like, I have a time machine, I'll go back to that moment, not any other, just that one.
You don't want to disclose who it was?
No, but you probably know who it was.
I'm gonna take a guess. Oh, I do it now, I'll do it later. Then I get people tweeting me, who
she
was
didn't
it?
Want to play with me. Like, looking back, like, she had a partner, I'm sure she's at the tournament already. Like, so she had a partner, and at the time, I didn't know that. Come to the tournament without a partner unless you know you're just like hoping to get in. So she, I'm sure she had a partner, she was highly ranked, they probably like have been playing together for years. I don't know, but anyway, funny story.
Oh my god, that's funny, so classic story. Well, then you just had to play with Serena and, you know, win 14.
I mean, I wasn't qualifying.
Is it 14 that you guys
Julie Hillard that year? I got through qualifying, I lost first round to Julie Hillard. It seemed like the toughest match, you just beat me 2-3 or whatever, and played her a few years later, and I guess I had Julie, so
you crushed her. Oh my god, you're hilarious. I think that's great. Well, then you ended up just having to sign up with Serena and, you know, hope for the best, right?
Well, I remember we played our first tournament and everyone was saying, oh, good luck, have fun. And we're looking at each other like, we're about to win. You know what I mean? They were like, hey, have a good time. We played Martinez and Terabibi in the first round. They were like seated.
Where? Was a Do you remember?
Indian Wells. Oh. Long, dramatical match. And somehow we ended up winning. I feel like we lost to you, didn't we?
No. Oh, I don't know. But
we got to the quarters, I feel like, and then we lost to
I don't know. We beat
maybe it was Lindsay. I don't know. It was somebody.
I'll look it up. I'll try and find it out. I'll put it out.
It was someone.
You lost to Lisa and I in Stuttgart when we were there. We played you in Filderstadt, remember?
That's probably like the only time we ever played Stuttgart Devils.
Yeah, it was my only win against you. And well, I went down every time really? After that. You took full revenge.
Mm-hmm. You're crazy.
One after the other after the other after that. And I was like,
Let it go. It's ruining my friendship.
I know. It's not. It's not. Talk to me about the Sjogren's when you discovered that. Like, how, first of all, how crazy it was, and how did you even know to say, oh, I'm tired, or what was going on?
I just basically had to get, you know, to the point where I couldn't play anymore to, you know, get a diagnosis, which is, I think, pretty typical for most people going through some sort of autoimmune disease. The typical diagnosis is about 7 years. So, yeah, that was my journey. And I never look back or whatever it is. It's part of, I guess, who I am.
And how did the, like, you had to change your diet and everything like that? Like, a lot of people ask me, you know, how did that affect you?
I do bad at it sometimes, so whatever. I'm trying. I'm human. I'm a human that loves junk food. And so I don't know how to
switch that off
unless I just move to Antarctica or something. And apparently there's no house. So,
no.
Unless you're a penguin. So, yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did that give you a little bit of, I don't know, impetus to when you discovered that and started trying to get control of it and to play as long as you have? Do you think it actually helped? Or
actually, yeah, I think so. I think so. I probably would have not played as long had that not happened. But anyway, it's a good job. So
yeah, I mean, one of the questions.
There's really good insurance in the WTA.
Oh my God, I can't believe you just said that.
Unreal.
It's so good.
It's so good.
That's what I tell
everybody.
Especially
for players, you're like in an MRI every other month and like you don't get a bill. It's like, it's great.
Oh my God. I tell that to everybody. One, you have free physiotherapy, you have free massage, and you have great health insurance. Keep playing. That's what I played till I was 40 as well. I mean,
I know.
And then I had to find my own insurance.
One day that like you that we they can extend that to. Is that how it works in other associations?
Health insurance?
They extend it to their retired players and there's benefits for them.
No, it'd be great if they did that, but no. I've searched for my own health insurance over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I can't retire because I got to keep that insurance card. So.
Here's the things that we don't realize about the tour life.
Tour life.
What was the toughest, if there was one match that you could go back to?
You can't go back. Go forward. Yeah, I think Jay-Z said that in one of his songs. Lost One, my favorite Jay-Z song, randomly. He said, can't go back, gotta go forward. So.
And it's funny that you say that, because some people I would say, come on, there has to be one match. But I actually really believe that with you.
Yeah, I don't dwell.
I think that's, would you say that's your greatest asset?
Maybe, yeah. I'm kind of, nothing really ruffles my feathers. So I think that definitely helps in life as an athlete and just life with COVID and life as, you know, an entrepreneur. You got to be able to not get too ruffled. So yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Serena's pretty similar. Yeah. I think like when she was getting married and, you know, most people are stressed out and it's like, yeah, I've kind of played in a Grand Slam final. I've like been down, you know, like this is nothing compared to that. So mm-hmm. yeah.
How does that affect you with your businesses? Because I mean, you have a lot of hats, a lot, you know, you yeah. have 11, your clothing line, you yeah. have V-Star Designs. Did I get that right?
Yeah. V-Star.
Yeah. Like how do you manage all of that?
I have a great team. I really love them. Like literally.
Yeah.
You know, it's a romance and I hope they never leave me, but if they do, hopefully they've left stronger and better and more skills. Uh-huh. That's what I like, is to be able to do that. And yeah, it's just really that great team. I think it's just love for what you do. Definitely being able to win a little bit helps to fuel you. If you're losing nonstop, you go out of business, and also it's exhausting. So being able to do that is also helpful. But I literally love design. So
yeah,
there you go.
Is that
here we are?
Yeah, design. We are in this beautiful home.
Yes, my style is very weird. My mom hates everything in here. She cannot understand why. Like this chandelier, she was like, what does that mean? Why is everything the same color? And I was like, that's what I want. You know, I inherited this old house, so I just try to work with it, you know, not fight against it. Like let's just go retro.
I don't know if you inherited it. I think you bought it.
I bought it, but it's like old, you know?
Yeah.
So.
But it's beautiful. It's you. It's very calm.
Thank you.
I think that's the one thing that I want people to understand about you the most is that, well, everybody knows how much I love you because I pretty much say it all the time, no matter what. I'm always like, if there's somebody that I want good for all the time, it's you because you constantly are giving it out. You know, obviously people think they know you, but they don't really know you.
No.
You know, what would be the one thing that you would want them to know about you? It was once somebody asked me on Twitter, you know, I'm sure that Venus gets asked, she's been asked every question in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What would be one question that someone could ask you where you...
Yeah. Well, I think people only get to see one side of me, which is like a very competitive side and also like a very calm and chill side, but I'm a straight fool. So like, I mean, and like, it's just crazy. I'm just crazy. And on court yesterday, I was saying to my coach, I said, I should just be like this in my match. I was like, people would be shocked. And he's like, you should. And I was like, oh, maybe.
And what is that? What is that on court? Like, what were you doing in practice yesterday?
I was just fooling around. Like, I'm actually much closer to Amalfi. Like, I'm crazy.
Yeah, you are. I've seen it. I've seen it when you're joking around.
So, not that it's crazy, but I'm just, like, very, very much in the moment and just very much alive and, like, whatever I feel like doing at that moment, I just do. But I'm not really like that in tennis. I'm just kind of a machine, but you know, I've been thinking about like letting that side come out, but also I don't ever want that side to be misconstrued as like unsportsmanlike either. Cause like if you hit a winner and you just want to like have fun, I think that's great. But a lot of people will be it's
like celebrating. Like,
yeah. But like, you know, if you lose a point, you know, let it out. Or if you win a point, you're like, yes. Or like have a smile.
Finger
or, like,
shooting.
Look across the net and like, you know, or whatever. It doesn't mean anything. It's just like, you know, you enjoying your moment and competing and just like letting the emotions come out.
Can I give you full permission to be this?
Yeah. People
when you play,
like, wow, now she's a jerk. I'm not a jerk. I'm just alive. You know?
So you're basically saying if you could allow yourself to play in the spirit of you as a 12-year-old, you would love that.
I am a 12-year-old.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
But surely. I said to you before we started this interview, I want anybody out there that hears this podcast that is in media or is a player that votes for you for the Karen Kransky Award, because I'm so sick and tired of the fact that you have played for 20 plus years on tour and you've never got the Karen Kransky Award.
Yeah.
And for people out there that don't know this is the sportsmanship award for the WTA that's given out.
Yeah. And I was like, well, how do you even get it?
You didn't even know. You're like, what is that? You have no idea because you don't pursue those things because it's not important. It's not. I shouldn't say it's not important.
I guess
to you.
I'm unsportsmanlike.
No.
It's just going to get worse from here on out.
I just want you to get, I mean, the things that you've been through on the tennis court, and you are always like, even if it's just like challenging call, I'm like, well, if she's challenging, then she's right. Because you just are such a good sport, you know? I mean, so I want you to get that award. So I'm putting that out there. And if you don't, I'm going to make my own award for you.
Thank you.
I'm going to call it the racket.
Use only the best construction paper.
I mean, and then there was me, who was completely the opposite of you on the court. So I know a good sport. I was a good sport. I was just crazy.
I just remember you, like, blowing up once in Australia.
Once?
Well, I just remember you got, like, a wild card to the main draw. Maybe you were playing Mariana Lucic. Do you remember that match?
Yes.
You went crazy. I'm looking at it like, what's going on?
What is wrong with her?
But also, it was also with the respect, too. Like, she really expects a lot of herself. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
you
cute.
Weren't there just to, like,
see, you always turn everything into around. A positive.
You were, like, there to, like, you had this intensity, and you were there to, like, you know? Well, it was, like, both, like, it was mesmerizing on both ends.
You know what was funny about that? It was that whole situation when Mariana Lucic made the finals of the Australian semis when she played Serena.
Yeah.
And when she won her quarterfinal to make the semi, I went out there to do the post-match interview. Mm-hmm. And she had told me the week before, after she won her first round, which was an incredible win for her in three sets against Wang Chong. And I said, well done yesterday. And she's like, yeah, thanks. You know, that's the first match I've won here in 19 years. I'm like, no way. I'm like, first of all, I'm like, what? How have you not won a match in that time? You know, because she's a great player. And she's like, yeah, you know, and obviously we know all of her trials and tribulations with her life. But she goes, yeah, and you know who I beat? And I was like, no, who? Thinking she was going to play, say Steffi or like Martina. Or she goes, you. I was like, oh, my God. So the last match you played here and won was against me, 19 years, and there was that match.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, right? So that's why she cried in that, because it was such a – I was hungover doing that interview.
Sounds about right.
I know. Can we actually talk about post-match and pre-match interviews? Can you tell me why? Because I want to know this for myself. Why are you the worst pre-match interviewer?
Because I'm in a zone. I don't really care about that question. And I'm going to say that next time I get in a pre-match interview. It's like, I just want to be keeping real with you. I don't care about this question because I got to play a match. Now, this question is a softball question. It don't make sense and it's stupid. And you're wasting my time. You know, it's like the speech at the end of Shawshank when Morgan Freeman says, fill out your paper, whatever. Frankly, I don't know what he says or what's in Scarlett O'Hara. Frankly, I don't give a damn. All those moments. It's going to be all those rolled up into one.
Oh, my God. I love you so much.
Because so I'm already on the court by the time I've answered that question. I'm already playing the match.
You're already in the pool and you don't care, even though it's me. It's okay.
Sorry.
It's rough.
Sorry.
The best part about it is that you're...
Next time I'm going to, like, give you a hard punch on the shoulder, be like, Renee, boom, how you doing?
Can I go now? No, next time I'm just going to have you, when you walk up to me, I'm just going to go, on you go. On you go.
Yeah.
Just go. Just keep walking.
And I'm going to do the guns. Pew,
pew, pew, pew, pew. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew. Yeah, that's great. So thanks for that. That's good to know, because you and Serena definitely take the cake for the worst pre-match interviews. When we get the roster for the day and there's like have me down doing pre-match for you or Serena, I'm like, oh God, here we go. And we're friends.
I'm glad we're able to communicate about this finally, though. Yeah. Open, honest form.
I can breathe now, knowing it's just not about me. That's great. Thanks. Could you imagine that this is like ended up being your life though? If you go back,
yeah.
You saw this, right?
Well, I'm very grateful, first of all. I think it was what I was meant to do. I really do. I don't know if you feel that way too.
Yeah.
It was what I was meant to do. And then I'm grateful for my parents and the opportunity. But at the same time, you know, you slog it for a million years doing other stuff. And as a tennis player, you're like a machine.
Yeah.
There's moments like, you know, yesterday I went out and I had a drink with a friend. And at those moments, you just feel like, man, this is nice. And then, you know, months later, you may not have another one. So even though I feel grateful, it's also like, yeah, hell yeah, I earned this.
Yeah.
Like, I deserve to be here. And this is not by chance. It's just by chance that I was born in a home where I had an opportunity to do so. But the rest is not by chance. So
can you, you know, one thing about your parents and particularly your dad, is there something that you feel like your dad didn't get enough due for?
I don't think he's got enough due for changing the game. Like, Serena and I, we went out there and we played, but it was really him who had all these big ideas and why we played the way we played and why everyone else is playing the way they play right now is, you know, because of us, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we were like the first ones hitting men or women's tour, like full time open stance backhands, like in any position, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, that's all my dad.
How do you feel about the movie being made? Will Smith playing your dad?
I actually haven't seen the...
Did you guys have anything
to do with it? I haven't seen the... My sister went out to see it, my older sister, last week, I think. So...
How do you guys feel about it? Like, did you have any, like, say in it? Or do you feel like it's representing you and him and...
I mean, I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
so
you don't know.
I got to go to the set twice. I've read the script. When I read the script, it was moments I forgot about that I was laughing at. Like, this is, so I was literally like laughing in the mother moments. Like, I was actually like
give me an
teary-eyed.
Example.
Oh. I don't remember. You know, I don't remember. But I think one example is like my dad would tell people, and you know, I'm not raising no dumb athlete, and my girls are gonna be here while we're dead and gone, and I'm not. And he would just like, and I was like, shoot, I forgot. Like, it was, and it's like so funny, but he was like, right, but in such an extreme way.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so those moments, and I don't remember like the rest, but like some of those moments I just had forgotten about.
Do you think that if you look back on the way you came into this tennis world, because obviously I was there front and center, I saw it all. I mean, I was on tour, and your dad was so adamant. He was so vibrant and so
crazy,
matter of fact, and at times a little crazy. And I mean, the scene of him like jumping onto the
roof in the best way possible
at Wimbledon. Like, if you, as an adult now, also not as a mom, but certainly as, you know, an aunt now, you know, you've seen how parents can and want for their children. Like, do you go back to that and go, I wish my dad hadn't been so outspoken and that, or are you so happy? I know that's a hard question to ask because you've turned into this amazing, yeah. You both, your whole family, it's just, you're so remarkable. But
yeah, I didn't really care. He got to do whatever he wanted to do. It didn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
To be honest, at the time, I didn't care.
So. Do you feel like that though? Like when because it was such a change for the tennis world to have these two incredible, athletic, incredible tennis players, black women, come out
right.
And just light the world on fire in the tennis world, and it was not what they were used to.
Yeah, actually, I never saw it that way, but I actually kind of got a glimpse into that. Because I'm just me,
yeah.
And you know, regardless of who I am or where I came from or what color, that's just me. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it any other way. But I was on YouTube the other day, and this match came up, suggesting, because I swear the phone like is totally
listening
to you, right?
Yeah.
I was talking to my coach about the '99 French Open final. It was like a '99 first final, and I written a post about it on Instagram. So of course it comes up on YouTube. So I click on it. And then I end up getting to like me playing in the finals in Miami in 1998. And I actually saw it. I was like this, you know, black woman child with beads. And I was just so different. And like, I actually saw it for the first time. And then I thought, oh my God, I'm so glad I didn't know I was so different. And maybe I wouldn't have cared knowing me, but at the same time, you know, maybe it would have been, you know,
overwhelming.
Not overwhelming, but
it would have made you more self-conscious, maybe.
I don't know, but I'm just glad I didn't realize it. Yeah. Being the me that I am, I didn't care. I didn't care then, and I don't care now.
And I'm sure Serena probably felt the same way, but why?
I never asked her.
How did you?
We just think we were like, oh my God, our style was just awful.
But really?
Horrible, but thankfully we've matured.
Well, and realized that that's actually not. It's actually fantastic.
No, at the time I had terrible styling. I was awful. And like, I think about it, I was like, why did my mom? But then again, my mom was probably struggling a little too. Her haircut at the time was a little challenged. So we were all struggling. Yeah, but like, you know, maybe you should like tell your kid to like not do that. I guess part of it is just letting them be who they are at the time, even if it's awful.
So I remember that moment at the Australian Open when the beads are on the court, and I have seen, I don't know where I saw that recently as well, and you were so...
Apparently it's trending.
You got a warning for it or something, and then you're like, what? You were so upset, and I remember that moment, and you were like really upset. Like you felt like there was such an injustice going on the tennis court because you had these things that were falling out of your hair. But for you, you're like, I'm not trying to do anything. But you think about that. You were so young. It's like, why would you think that anyone would do anything to hurt anyone? Right.
Well, I'm glad I stood up for myself. I mean, all you have to do is just like freaking take the thing off the court. Like people's hair pins fall all the time and other pieces. So, yeah, but yeah.
I
stood up for myself. It was a moment.
Yeah. It's over. How do you feel about being such, I mean, I ask you this quite often in post-match interviews because I'm so proud of like you guys in everything in general. But like, how awesome is it for you to see all these young black girls? And you think about someone like Coco. I mean, that match, even though it didn't go your way, it was so beautiful to see that moment when she shook your hand and said,
really
"I am."
Well. She played awesome.
But it was the moment of the shaking of the hand when she's like, "I just like." You know, that moment was so poignantly beautiful in some respects because this kid who has looked up to you so much in her life and modeled a lot of her game after you, I mean, her backhand, you know, on the run, it's like open, the whole thing, right? And her dad would have watched you and Serena and watched the way your father took you two to being the best two players in the world. I mean, is that a legacy that you can actually at least look back and go, I hope that was part of what we've done for this sport.
I love seeing people doing positive things with their lives and just seeing, you know, even at all sorts of levels, just somehow I was at a junior tournament the other day, you know, there's so many African-American young boys and girls playing collegiate level, and that's great too. But, of course, you know, there's lots of people I've impacted, and I definitely am African-American, but also at the same time, you know, there's so many other people I've impacted too. And that's more than what you think about as a kid. You're just trying to get out there and get something for you, you know? So that's great. And also what's really interesting is the phenomena of all the people, all the dads that want to be like Richard Williams. So it's like all these people out there, like trying to be, you know, the next Richard Williams, which is impossible unless you're willing to be, you know, crazy as a fox. And I think most people just don't have the guts. But frankly, my dad didn't give a damn. So in that instance, you know, so I have kind of that same attitude. Like, we don't care. We'll do us. So, I kind of love seeing that, you know.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That's one of the many legacies that you're all going to leave behind. You're still playing. You're getting to the end of this now, interview. What's one goal that you want to achieve this year?
Stay healthy, which is tough.
Yeah.
I think as long as I can pull that together, I'll be playing good tennis. I had fun in my last match. I had moments of brilliance, but I just couldn't pull it together. I was having so much fun that it was over.
Well, and also you were coming back from a pretty terrible ankle injury that you sustained.
It was a nightmare.
I know. I asked you this before, but I do want people to know, like, you played through such pain at the Australian Open, and everyone's like, why is she doing this? I'm like, because it's Venus. Like, she just doesn't want to give up if she thinks there's a chance.
Yeah, in my head, I think I can win this match. And I don't want to ever look back with any regrets, but even though I lost, like, 6-0, I didn't even realize it was kind of 6-0. In my head, I'm like, okay, yeah, next game, and then, you know, I'm close. It's 30-all, it's deuce, I have chances, and I would have never been able to play the next match, but I was out there at that moment. You know, it was pretty epic.
You had so many admirers though, because they were just like, "God, she just won't let it go. She just gotta keep trying till the last ball is hit."
Till the fat lady said.
Well, you're an inspiration to so many. I wanna give me one answer to some of your best rivals, Lindsay Davenport.
Oh, I just loved watching her play, you know, and just such a pure game, just even outside of playing her, which was always just battle royale, which was very different. She didn't, she didn't match up that well against Serena, but somehow against me, it was like her best tennis. But I, outside of that, I just loved watching her play. You know, it was just fun to watch her hit the ball.
Hingis.
Man, just like total opposites, you know, in terms of, you know, game style.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's what made it interesting and exciting was like that kind of.
Very different life.
Very different. Very and she different. Was fun to watch play too. Even when she was just playing doubles, it was just fun to watch her somehow win these points.
Yeah.
So I don't think you, you know, really appreciate the person until, you know, you're much older. I think as a kid though, you know, I had like my sister and stuff, but she was out there by herself, you know. And I think she valued friendships with other players, and I think she wanted to, like, even though you're playing against each other, she probably wanted to, like, connect in a way as well, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it was like, I want to beat you, but I also kind of want to be your friend, you know? Yeah. I always got that vibe from her.
From Hingis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I already had a friend on tour, so it was like I didn't actually need it.
You had Serena.
Yeah,
and Serena. So you're like, I'm good. I'm good with my one friend.
Not that we ever talked, but
yeah,
I think she would have enjoyed that. But that was, that's just my opinion. She was a kid.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, of course you want to have friends, you know?
Kim Clijsters.
I don't think we played that often, did we?
I don't know.
I don't think we played a lot.
Justine Enna.
I didn't play her often either. I mean, I played her maybe like 5 times.
What do you think of the game today in comparison to that period of time where it was like a Capriati, you know, you, yourself, Serena, Maresmo, I mean, Hennen, Clijsters. I mean, the top 10 was, ooh, it's pretty bloody impressive.
It was impressive, especially when the USA had like 4 or 5 people in the top 10. I was like, it was like me, Serena,
Monica.
Yeah, Lindsay was like, the flag was waving. It was awesome. But I don't
know. What like now, saying? like comparative to the tennis now, the depth of tennis now.
It's definitely much deeper, but I think in the sense that more that people are much more determined. And, you know, at the time, I think people didn't have the self-confidence. So they would just say, oh, I'm supposed to lose to the XYZ player. And now they're like, they probably still think that, but they're still trying like so hard. I think that's the biggest difference. And the courts have changed, you know, it's a lot slower. So if you're not as athletic, you can still get to the balls and things like that. So the courts were faster then. So if you were a real athlete and had more power, then you were going to most likely wipe off white people off the face of the planet. And now, like Miami Open, and I was slow because I was, you know, still recovering. I was like, I'm not going to get this ball. I got to the ball. I'm at the ball. You know, I'm like, what's happened? The court was so freaking slow. So if you're not a super athlete right now, you're still like in the equation.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
But if you're fit, you can hang in there. Because you can run every ball down.
I think people are a lot fitter, too. Definitely a lot fitter.
Hence the reason you've still got to do the cardio and not the weights.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Fed Cup. Would you ever consider being the coach?
No.
Would you ever coach?
I like working with young people. I think I'll, you know, I think maybe if I have a separation from tennis for a few years, maybe it'd be refreshing to come back on tour. I have no desire to wait on a rain delay. I don't care if it's your coach or whatever. I'm done. I don't want to be there. And I already don't want to be there, you know, sitting on site for 10 hours.
No.
So I'll need a separation from that, I think. But I love being able to be on the court with young people. Actually, I like working with beginners. Really. So I think I'd probably just do, like, grassroots stuff at home.
And you just wrote that article in Vogue, British Vogue. It was British Vogue, correct? Mm-hmm. About fighting, continually fighting for, you know, women getting equal pay. I mean, is that a passion?
Yeah.
Is there going to be a passion for you until?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just something that we started was the privilege tax and fighting for equality for women, you know, especially in the workplace. And, of course, all platforms. But, yeah, absolutely. And it's not just something we're going to do in March. We're just going to it's something we started. And it's just gone really well. People have really been excited about it and gravitated toward it and wanted to partner with us on it. So it's definitely something we'll do throughout the years and, you know, do it a bigger way even next March. And I'm definitely very passionate about equality and about kids. you know, not everyone has a chance. And even equality on the smallest levels, you know, the most minute levels are extremely important. If you don't have clean water, then you're going to be sick. If you're sick, you can't go to school. If you can't go to school, you can't get education. It's a domino effect. Just having the opportunity for clean water is so important. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just being able to fight for equality on all levels is definitely something I'm passionate about and want to do more in and wish I even had more time to do, but all in good time.
All in good time.
All in good time.
I guess.
I'm still out here getting this insurance, so, you know.
That's going to be the basis for this. Well, maybe you should be a politician. Maybe you should start,
I don't play games too well.
Really?
No, I just got to keep it real.
You keep it real. You've kept it real for the 30 years that I've known you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's really how long I've known you. So
yeah, it's been a minute.
It's been a minute. It's been a pleasure. Without question, loved and hated playing against you. but I think more than anything, I've loved getting to know you more and more as we've gotten older as a human being. And for everybody at home that knows me and knows when I commentate your matches or when I talk about you or I write on Twitter or whatever it is, I always just tell everyone that you are truly one of my favorite people in the whole world. So,
well, besides Serena, of course.
Yeah, she's just a little behind you.
I don't think she'll be happy to hear that.
Well, you're first. You know, you're the oldest. Yeah, you're closer than my age.
That's fair.
Not by much. Anyway, I love you to death, and thanks for joining me on my little pod.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sports ad free. That's Amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.